When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the On the Farm Pitcherless Podcast about all things prospect, dynasty, and minor league related. Today, we have a really cool show kind of planned out for y'all. We're going to start just by going over some stuff that we've seen in spring training, talking about, you know, some players that have really jumped out to us, maybe how some roster competitions, some roster spot competitions are shaken out, and we're going to then introduce a guest, bring a guest on to the show to talk about some sleeper prospects. We are going to be joined by Chris Welsh. I mean, if you don't know who he is, why are you listening to this podcast of all things? But what, you know, Chris is everywhere, man. He's working with the Athletic for a bit last year. He's with Fantasy Pros now. He does a ton of work. He created the Endless League and the Prospect One podcast, everything. So he's all over the map and does some really great analysis. He's been at spring training, covering it this year. And so he'll give some great insight about, you know, what he's seeing on the backfields and what he's kind of taken away from his experience to give us some sleepers. Rick and I will each give some sleepers. So we got a whole bunch of stuff planned for the episode. It's going to be awesome. But Rick, as always, thank you for being here, for hopping on and leading the charge with me. How are you doing today, man?
I'm just here so I don't get fined. I believe that's what a football player said a while back, right?
A football player said. Yeah, no, I think that was that was Beast Mode. That was Marshawn Lynch.
That was Marshawn Lynch.
That's Nick right. Pollock, damn. If you're listening, I'm so sorry. We're talking about football, but it's,
he'll love it.
It's pop culture. It's everywhere. So, anyway, I love the spring. The weather's getting better. It's, you know, we've seen some sun in the Northeast recently, and baseball is coming. March Madness is happening. Not to talk about another sport other than baseball, but the Iowa women's team just won the Big Ten championship. Go Hawks. And, you know, life is good. Life is good. So I think that it's so nice to be here in the spring and be talking about baseball. How have you thought about spring training so far? You know, what have you seen? What's something you're excited about going into 2024, Rick?
Well, yeah, man. I mean, as a fellow Hawk, you know, as a prospect I do enjoy the spring quite a bit. To kind of circle back with our guests that we're going to end up having today, I'm super, super excited to have Chris Welsh on. For those who have listened to me before on different podcasts, Chris is one of the main reasons why I got into doing this a long time ago. And I was very fortunate enough to be able to meet him at First Pitch Arizona this past year. Super awesome guy, so generous with his time with talking with us. Had me on the Prospect One podcast a little while back as well. So really excited to be able to talk with him. We'll get into that in a little bit. As for spring training, Jake, I mean, listen, baseball is here. We're getting so close to the minor league season, which is really what I kind of gravitate towards in general. I love, you know, playing, you know, fantasy baseball, dynasty baseball with the MLB rosters and everything like that. But I love being able to get out to minor league games. So much so, Jake, that I have been making it a point all this spring to be able to get out to as many college games as I possibly can, Wake Forest included. Yeah. But you know what? It's really nice to be able to turn on the screen, not have to get in my car and drive out to Winston-Salem and get a ticket and get there with the ballpark. I just can just pull up my iPad and watch spring training. And you know what? I think it's a great time of the year, man. I'm so excited.
Yeah, absolutely. We said iPad, and I'm just picturing you and your kids sitting on the couch each with your tablets, you know, just like each in your own little worlds. You're like an iPad kid at heart, a baseball fan is at the end of the day. That's awesome.
Oh, they absolutely love it. And they'll just be like, Daddy's watching the baseball game. They just refer to it as the baseball game, anything.
The baseball game, yeah.
Or they just think I'm watching Mets all the time. they're not wrong.
Right. That's awesome. Yeah. Spring training is cool. I think what I'm trying to do this year with spring and is pay maybe a bit more attention. You know, spring training is like, I think you can get into information overload a little bit pretty quickly with just how many things are happening, with how many tweets are like, I'm always pretty like involved with baseball Twitter, and I'm always kind of, that's most of my feed, but it really ramps up this time of year. And there's like so much information that's put out, so many videos of insane sliders and like, and you know, heaters and guys going deep, and you know, Corbin Burns giving up two homers to nobody's, I can't remember who they were, no offense, but like, you know, there's so many things that are happening that it's kind of like at some point you kind of have to make the business decision to ignore a lot of it, and just kind of like, I've drafted my teams, you know, I have my dynasty teams already, I'm ready for the season, and like, please can we just have games count already? And yeah. What I've kind of noticed the last few years is that usually when the season starts, I'm a bit slow to like react to changes, because I think that there's like part of like the, I don't want to say old school, but like part of my kind of philosophies coming up as a fantasy player, God, that sounds pretentious, is that like, is that, you know, small samples will kill you, everything kind of evens out at the end, don't overreact. But I think what we've seen, what I've noticed for my teams is that maybe I'm slow to get on, you know, guys early in the season. I miss out on a lot of players early on, especially in redraft leagues when these guys kind of come up and you're like, oh, like, you know, how is Taylor Ward? Like, is he legit? He's a 29-year-old prospect. This was back in like, what, 2022, you know, and then all of a sudden, like he continues playing awesome. And, you know, so you might miss on some of that. And so I'm trying to be more proactive to pay attention in what's happening in spring, maybe kind of catch wind of some things before they happen. And with how big prospects have been, you know, in the majors recently, like last year, I think you kind of have to like pay attention maybe a bit earlier to kind of get on top of some things before they happen. And I'm trying, but it's so much. It's like so much is happening in the spring. But honestly, yeah, like I'm so ready for the Korean League, the series out there, the Dodgers and the Padres, and then just, you know, ready for baseball, ready for the weather to turn, and, you know, do our best in the leagues and the analysis and bringing y'all all the prospects to watch. So it's an exciting time of year, but hopefully this year I'm able to be a bit more proactive early on and kind of grab those guys that might be impactful, both from prospect side and some redraft guys, you know?
I think you're absolutely right. The information overload can really happen this time of the year because, number one, we're seeing prospects, you know, in spring training. A lot of folks post a ton of videos and posts on Twitter or tweets on Twitter all the time in the beginning of the season, and then they just kind of fade away as the year goes on. So like, yeah, you know, you watch your like main guys that you know tweet pretty regularly, you know, Cross, Clegg, the Welsh, Jeff Ponce, you know, these types of guys who just and many more that I did not list, but you know, these guys are very regular in their tweets and their posts and their analysis and everything along that line. And I think a lot of times we get like really excited over, you know, some, not even just prospects, even major league, you know, teams. I have to remind myself that I drafted or I built a team with a designed purpose, right, and I need to have some patience. Now, when it comes to prospects in terms of like early spring training production, if they're available on my waiver wire, my deeper leagues, then maybe I'll take a little bit of a risk. I usually go in with a little bit of leeway to be able to pick those guys up relatively quickly. I like that approach more so than being reactionary, like the news today with Garrett Cole.
Yeah.
I'm seeing everybody just like trying to sell him for pennies on the dollar right now. And there, unless it's come out, you know, within the last 15, 20 minutes since we've been potting, I haven't seen that he necessarily needs Tommy John.
So. Right. That's the kind of the jump scare, you know? But at this point, he's just getting it looked at. And you know, there is maybe some value that you can accrue just by taking the risk to either sell or buy when we don't have the news yet, you know, either going and acquiring, you know, or shipping him off to someone who's really eager or just drafting, you know, him. But like, I think for me, it's just that like slight edge isn't quite worth the potential like boom that you might get from, you know, if he's healthy and you draft him in like the fifth round, or if he's healthy and you acquire him for, you know, not a whole lot. I'm just someone who just would rather know, you know, for sure, and just pay correct value based upon that. You know, if we know he's going to be out with Tommy John, or if we know he's just going to be missed a few starts in March and April, then like it is what it is. But there's just so much that can be played around with in like the unknowns, which is like, I think it's honestly like gambling, right? Like the house always wins. You have to win like 6 out of 10 bets to break even in the sports books right now. And so it's like, and there's, so, it's, you kind of have the odds stacked against you, I think, if you're kind of playing in the gray area there. But there's just so much happening all the time. And it can be chaotic, but what we're going to talk about here is a few things that we've noticed that has, you know, that's been happening, some different maybe changes in roles, different opportunities that have opened up for some guys that we've noticed in spring training and that we're, you know, might be excited about to see kind of happen into the regular season. Rick, I wanted to start with you. You put Wyatt Langford on this list. Obviously such a huge topic right now. You know, it's a conversation about, you know, do you believe in rookies? Do you believe in a small sample size? You know, where do you stand on what you've been seeing with Wyatt Langford here, you know, going into 2024?
So I have been very lucky to be able to not only see Wyatt Langford in spring training, which he's, you know, doing very well. I was able to see him live in Greensboro last year whenever he came through with Hickory. And I was just very impressed with his approach at the plate, you know, how he was able to, you know, work the counts, be able to get a pitch to hit and be able to drive it from there. Obviously, you know, with his time in Florida as well, very, very successful, you know, college player. And quite frankly, in a year in which Skeens and Cruz were not, you know, in there, he would have been the number one default. And obviously, we've been seeing a lot of this in, you know, first-year player drafts. But to kind of fast forward to what's going on right now, the Rangers obviously won it all last year. They're wanting to continue this trend going forward. Wyatt Langford made it all the way up to AAA last year. And in spring training, in the 10 games that he has played, he is slashing .346, .438, .808 with 4 home runs, Jake. So he's hitting the ball with authority. With 9 RBIs. But what I like the most is that he's walking at 12.5%. That is great. The strikeouts are a little bit concerning at 31.3%, far and away the most that he's had in his young career to this point. But, you know, this might also be a little bit of the competition in which that he's facing. It might just be a little bit of a learning curve that maybe he has to address. I think that there's a very real possibility that he might be able to crack the opening day roster with the Rangers if he continues to have the success that we're seeing right now with the power. He's going to have to bring down those strikeout rates in order to stay up there. Otherwise, we're going to see another Jordan Walker type of situation from last year where they might send him back down to AAA just to kind of get right and then bring him back. But I think we're going to be seeing him, if not right out the gates, very, very early on. In the season here.
Right. And, you know, it's such a really great profile. And you can kind of debate the competition that he saw in college and kind of if that's equivalent to, you know, maybe at bats in low A or maybe high A, you know, but the fact of the matter is that college bats move quicker usually, you know, and we've seen some college bats come through very quickly. And, you know, he's only been a professional for less than a year, but I think that he has those skills that you look for in a mature hitter, you know, with his plate approach that we saw. And like you said, he hasn't been as great in the spring, but it's all small samples. But the plate approach that he's, you know, showed in college and showed in the minors last year, general contact skills, the power that you see from him, you know, I think in Dynasty, if you have him, you have him. You know, like you're running him out there if he's on the team, right? If he's on the Rangers. And it is what it is. You know, you're not really gonna, you might bench him if he's in a poor matchup or if he's not playing a lot. Depends on the league and all that. In a redraft league, like if you can get him around pick 150, right about where he's going now, there's a lot of players that you can whiff on in that range. There's a lot of guys that we've seen get injured. You can't predict it. There's a lot of guys that just end up sucking. You know, like it is the kind of the game, and you just can't have too many of them. And you just need to balance it, you know, when you're building a roster. And I know I'm not really like reinventing the wheel here, but I think there's room for him to like struggle a little bit and still be valuable. Jordan Walker wasn't great where he was drafted last year value wise, but he still like hit, he had to go back down and came back up, but like he hit his stride kind of down the stretch there and like is a very good hitter. It's not fair that we have expectations of these guys when they come up and have all the hype behind them, but usually very talented hitters just kind of win out. You know, if you bet on talent, you're looking pretty good. And so I think that there are worse gambles that you can take at that range. I think if you're drafting, he's not a hitter, so it doesn't quite work exactly, but like Justin Verlander, you know, he's done it. He's been there, but he's a 40-year-old pitcher and he's already injured in the spring. And so it's like he's going about that range too. There are risks throughout the entire draft. It's just, you know, which risks are you more willing to take? And as I think people like us who are watching prospects often, that's usually more of my sweet spot is taking a risk on an unproven guy that I think I'm pretty familiar with. And I think that he definitely fits that bill. So, you know, Langford, of course, is one of the most talked about guys, but I think it's, you know, it comes down to building a roster and being kind of comfortable with it. And I won't knock anyone who does it and even pushes them up a little bit because, you know, there's a lot that can go right there. And even if you lose, hopefully you have free agents that can come in and, you know, you just got to kind of work around it. But another one that we've seen that's been a cool development for me personally, seeing AJ Puck, I was kind of suspicious, I think, of him moving from the rotation. I was shocked to see that, you know, when I went and looked at his Fangraphs page when I first heard about the potential move, he doesn't have a start at the major league level. And that was surprising me for me because he was always like a starting pitcher prospect, you know, with some reliever risk. He ended up in the bullpen. Like he was a great, you know, closer for a little bit there. But it was just shocking to me to see that like he has not started a game in his major league career. And so that kind of originally was like, whoa, like this hasn't been done since the minors. Like, is he going to be able to stick? And I've been pretty skeptical throughout. Even in the spring, it's 3 appearances, 8.1 innings, which is, again, small sample. But I just think that getting him in like a reserve round, like I just took him in TGFBI in the 27th round, I think, reserves, like fourth bench player. And if he's on your bench, you're going to like, if he's not there, you're going to drop him pretty quickly anyway. So many guys after pick like 200, 250, you're just churning out anyway. And if you can even maybe like, they're the price for him right now in a dynasty league is probably going to be a little heavier because he's elevated. I would have no problem waiting until he is starting games in the regular season, watching him and then going and acquiring him for the cost, you know, because I think that the payoff compared to the cost of what it's going to be if he's doing pretty well in season, like I think it's still a decent value, even if you have to pay up a little bit, because AJ Puck with the stuff that he has in starters innings, if he's able to hold up, is potentially a really huge difference maker that you can add to a team either through the draft or through trading. So he's someone I'm definitely kind of watching. Like I mentioned earlier, he's one of those guys that I'm trying to be more aware of going in instead of just kind of writing it off and saying, hey, he doesn't have a major league start. He can't throw strikes in a starting appearance. It is what it is. I'll let someone else take the risk. I'm a bit more willing to buy in a little bit, in a conservative way, one or two teams maybe, you know, because yeah. I think that, yeah, the payoff would be great.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. And here's the thing with AJ Puck, whenever you look at what he's been able to do in his two healthy seasons, because he really does only have two,
yeah.
you know, fully healthy seasons, he had a very good control in terms of limiting the walks. You know, in 2022 with Oakland, you know, 62 appearances, 66 and a third innings pitched, he had a 3.12 walks per nine. So this is a guy that, you know, they were a little worried whenever he was in the minor leagues on whether or not he could remain a starter with the walks and the control. For the most part, he's kept it under control. Last year, 58 appearances with the Marlins, he ended up having a 2.06 walks per nine. So
that's also shocking to me. I don't think I'd realized yeah. he was just that good out of the bullpen and limiting the walks last year.
Yeah, and I mean, double-digit strikeout rates here. I mean, even here in spring training in the small sample size, yes, the walks are a little bit elevated. But early in spring training, I'm not really worried about that because they're really trying to ramp up and get themselves, you know, get themselves back in shape here. But, I mean, even right now, he's got a 16.20 K per nine with a 4.32 walks per nine. It'll come back down, honestly, probably to the three. Mid twos to three walks per nine. I like that. And he's done a very good job limiting the home runs. Spiked a little bit there in Miami for a little while last year. But all in all, I mean, if he's able to withstand the workload of a starter and remain healthy, which has eluded him to this point, I don't like putting injury tags on people because, you know, some of these are circumstantial. But if he can stay healthy and do what he's done to this point as a reliever, as a starter, I think it's pretty impressive. And Miami has a great track record of developing pitchers. This is somebody that I agree, Jake, is a good one to be able to buy in on.
Right. And, you know, with the whole injury thing, like it just takes one healthy season, two healthy seasons, and then you forget about it. You know, like yeah. Sonny Gray is now injured, but he was thought of really throughout the offseason as like a pretty safe veteran. And for the longest time, it was like, ooh, can he stay healthy? And we see it all the time, you know, that happens. Like it doesn't take a lot for the entire narrative to switch. And Puck's been healthy for the last two seasons. You know, it's an increased workload, but he's also solidly in the rotation. Like he's not going to get bumped out. He'd have to perform really badly because they have Edward Cabrera and Trevor Rogers behind him right now. And like each of them have their own struggles. Trevor Rogers has been in and out again. It takes one healthy season with him. But, you know, there's just, I don't think anyone's going to push him out. I think he's going to get the run. And I'd like to see, you know, where he goes with it.
Yeah.
And then another one, well, we'll do like maybe one or two more here. Jared Jones. I think what's interesting about pitching, we could talk about pitching sleepers. We're going to talk about it later this episode. And the amount of time in an off season that we have to go through all of these like box scores and pitcher success stories and whatnot, it's so hard for a pitcher to stay under the radar throughout an off season. Like Jared Jones at the end of last year wasn't super like talked about. You know, he wasn't really realistically going to make the majors last year, and so you know he's not going to get talked about a whole lot down the stretch when everyone's focusing on other things. But the offseason happens, everyone kind of takes a step back, dives back in, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, have you seen Jared Jones? Did you see what Jared Jones did last year? Oh, is he throwing 100 miles? Oh, God, where did this come from? You know, so it happens, and, you know, you see him in the DCs, the, you know, the drafting holes that happened in the offseason. He starts kind of creeping up, and you start hearing him on cold podcasts. And all of a sudden, he's in spring training. You got the videos of him blowing guys away. So I saw a comparison of his fastball to Jacob DeGrom's fastball on Twitter the other day and how they were like identical in shape and whatnot and velo even. And so it's like that all it happens so mm-hmm. quick. So now it's like Jared Jones, what do you know, like is he going to make the rotation? Because I don't quite trust the Pirates to like let him do that. But I think he's like has the skill, you know, above anyone that they have outside of maybe Mitch Keller. Like they have some veterans. They have Martin Perez is there now. There's another one that I'm missing. And, you know, like Luis Ortiz probably gets the first crack at it. And then they still have Rowanzi there, Marco Gonzalez, that's the other one. And so, you know, it's not exactly a wide open door, but he's someone who could definitely pitch his way into consideration there. And I mean, the stuff is still outrageous. Like, he's someone that even as the hype goes, the stuff is still legit. I love the cutter that he's really been working on that we've seen in spring training. That just adds some depth and dimension to the arsenal. The fastball is ridiculous. And it's, you know, I think it looks good. He added vert to his fastball. I think it was about an inch. It went from like 16 to 17, because I remember I was looking at it last year and I was like, 16, not bad, not great. But he throws 99. It is what it is. That's like Hunter Green is a similar shape. I just don't think like fastball vert is as important for higher velocity anyway. And then he comes into spring training and he adds an inch. And it's like, well, that's like important. He didn't need to do that necessarily, but I love that he did. And so I think that, I mean, it's been really fun to watch, and he's someone that I'm very happy to have on a few teams, because it's tough to acquire him now on a dynasty team. But I think he has a legit shot at getting some really great innings this year. You know, and the Pirates are sneaky. The Pirates aren't going to be horrible, I think, especially with the healthy O'Neill Cruz. You know, they have like Bubba Chandler also there kind of coming up that could help. So, I mean, I think that's a decent situation. And the hype is insane right now, but he's one like of a lot of the guys that are getting hyped right now, he's one of my favorites to actually buy in on, even through it, because I definitely kind of saw this. Oh, God, not to be that guy who sees this coming. But he's someone that it's like, okay, the skills have been there. It's not just Twitter videos, right? Like, he has a history of this arsenal, you know, and showing this, and then even improving on it. So those improvements, the added potential to make the team, how close he was, how he pitched in AAA already, you know, these things are all kind of piling up now and makes it a good opportunity to get in on it.
I think what makes it so fun about this, you know, he was drafted in 2020 as a high school arm, and he just feels like he's been in Pittsburgh's organization for so long. I recall talking with him several times throughout the 2022 season while he was in High Greensboro, and I was just so amazed. Number one, he is a smaller build in general. And I was just so amazed at the, you know, amount of just speed he was able to get with his fastball in High A at that size. It's not something that you see all that often, especially in the lower minors like this. But it was really impressive to see him work with his fastball and his slider. And you could tell that there was something really there. I just couldn't figure out if he was going to make it as a starter or move to a relief pitcher long term. I think as of to this point, he has really earned our appreciation for him being a starter until proven otherwise, right?
Yep.
You know, and with, you know, reforming some of his pitches, you know, obviously adding in the cutter, you know, I think that this is a very exciting prospect, and he is one of the worst kept secrets of the offseason.
Right.
Like, period. Yep. If you didn't get him before the World Series, like, you weren't going to get him. That's just what it was at that point.
Right.
And it's crazy because we're talking about a guy who has only had an ERA below 4.62 once. That was last year at AA, where he had a 2.23 ERA, but he's been primarily a 4 ERA pitcher. I'm hoping that he's able to unlock something to be able to kind of limit it. And let's be honest, the defense that has been behind him in the Pirates organization, because I've seen the majority of them, it's not the best.
Right.
Just being honest defensively. So you see it with this FIP, you know, he gets very unlucky. Mm-hmm. So the good guy to be able to buy into, I like it. It's a great prospect to be able to stash, you know, going in here or trade for in your dynasty leagues. But draft, great last pick flyer to be able to go into the year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and there I was kind of feeding my own ego, going, well, I knew about Jared Jones back in the last year.
Geez.
I watched him pitch, and you come in and you go, well, I talked to him in 2022. there's always someone that was on him first, folks. You are never the first. As I am always
now.
Learning with you, Rick, you're always down on these guys. And very early in the process. But, you know, it's I think it's that honestly, unless I'm maybe going into this the end of this season, we can revisit it later. But like being the first to really digest the results of the minor league season before the off season happens, because like we would have maybe seen Christian Scott, very similar process, who posted like a 28% K minus BB. And it was like, you do your off season prep and you go, oh, wait a minute. Like, where did this come from? You know, like maybe if, as there's a lot happening at the end of the season, maybe we do an episode where we kind of like, as the minor league season is dwindling down in September and we're really focusing on like finishing our leagues, like maybe we kind of take a minute to look at kind of what we've seen in the minors and how we can kind of even maybe predict some of this offseason hype. Cause it's like a crazy, you know, a crazy process over the offseason for sure, as these guys just get bigger and bigger and bigger, and then they blow up in spring training with everything. So that's something to keep in mind that we'll try to do later this year. But with that, we're going to take a break and we're going to come back and we're going to have the awesome part of the episode for y'all today, where we talk to Chris Welch about the sleeper hitters and pitchers, prospects that y'all should know heading into 2024.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When something happens to your car, you might say,
"No! My car!"
But what you really need to say is something that can actually help.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And just like that, State Farm is there to help you file your claim right on the State Farm mobile app. So just remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well...
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
All right, so we got Chris Welch with us here today. We're ready to talk about sleeper prospects that you all should know heading into the 2024 season. You know, Chris has been super active recently all over spring training and just, you know, doing appearances on so many shows and whatnot. So we're so lucky to have him here with us today to kind of, you know, talk about some guys with us and give us some insight. So we're going to dive right into it. But first, Chris, thank you so much for being here. And how you doing today, man?
I am glad to be here. You know, it's rocking. It's spring training time. It's chaos. It's crazy. You know, you guys know it's shows and it's, I mean, whether you're consuming, you know, it's funny because like, you know, you guys probably have even a better advantage of consuming a lot of the like televised spring training stuff and getting to do that where, you know, from my own respect, I'm on the field. So I've been missing a lot of, so I've actually done less spring training from a game perspective than I've ever done. But I'm on the backfields every single day. There's minor league spring training games. Weird stuff is going on. I was telling you guys off air. I happen to be at Camelback Ranch. And then, like, there's this random, the Trevor Bauer, you know, Asian Breeze travel ball team is going on. Today, there were, like, six minor league teams at Camelback Ranch where it was, like, two Guardians teams and a Dodger team and a White Sox team. So, like, that's my world right now. So I'm consumed in that from the major league and the minor league standpoint. But I'm very glad to be here, and I'm very thankful that you guys wanted to have me on.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Of course, I think most people with a prospect podcast would want you on for sure.
That's nice.
All right, so we're gonna get right into the sleepers, man. We're doing it, and we're gonna start with we're gonna do two sleeper hitters from Chris, two sleeper hitters from Rick, and then we're gonna go over to pitchers, two from Chris, and then two from myself. Kind of get a little bit of analysis going for y'all. So we're gonna start with Chris's first sleeper hitter. What do you got for us, man?
All right, we're going to go. I really didn't realize this. I'm a little like tease. I don't realize I did two Dodgers, and I 100% did. I'm going to talk to you about two Dodgers. So just strap in that you're going to hear this nonsense. But I'm going to pick on one of these guys who I just saw the other day in Andy Pejas. And Andy Pejas is a fascinating prospect, especially over the last couple of years, because Pejas is a big boy. I'm a big boy. I'm 6'4". I'm a big guy. And Andy Pejas was a pretty large human being. And when I say that, I'm saying like out of shape. And he had this light tower power. Saw him in the Arizona Fall League a couple of years ago. And then this process has happened over the last year and a half where he is becoming a physical specimen. He lost in a significant amount of weight over the last year and a half, but there was this 3-month period between the AFL and the start of spring training where he lost a ton of weight. Well, that ended up, and we've seen this happen before, that ended up having some effect on his season totals. How was that? Power completely depleted. He went from 26 homers in 2022 to hitting 3. Now it was less games, it was like 33 games, but still, if you like span it out over the same amount of games played, that would probably have been his home run power cut in half. But his average went up. So, you know, physically changes his body, into this offseason. And I'm leading this. I even bring up Trevor Bauer, but Andy Pejas happened to be the person leading off in that frenzy-ish, gimmicky game that happened the other day. And whatever you think, we're not going to make this about Bauer because it doesn't need to be. But in all of the like, he was this and he was that, I'm going to tell you something. Andy Pejas owned him. Absolutely owned him in that at bat. Whatever else he did, that was fine. Pejas, complete control, didn't swing through anything, and he got the sole hit off of Bauer, who ended up just, you know, laying a fastball in, and Andy ripped it into center. So I'm saying this all to kind of lead back in to say he's having a phenomenal spring. Power is coming back up. He's hit 2 homers in spring. Batting averages up. Strikeouts have maintained down. And he's had enough time to register and learn this new body type. And which really, we've seen a lot of guys. I remember Noelvi Marte, and sorry, I'm kind of droning on here, but like Noelvi Marte, when he was this little guy, and now we unfortunately kind of know how he became a bigger guy. It wasn't all, you know, what we wanted, but there was a time period where that wasn't the chiseled bigger muscle version of the new suspended Noelvi Marte. This went from like, he was this like small skinny kid to all of a sudden, boom, he became this kind of big dude, so much so that there were some worries about like, maybe he's getting overweight and maybe he's not gonna be able to do this. And what happened during that period of time? He got slower. He wasn't able to work through this new body. So I'm really intrigued by players that make big changes in their body one way or the other. And sometimes you can dictate good or bad. And like Noelvi in adding the weight, that was a bad thing. And he had to learn and unfortunately cheated to get through that process. Andy Pejas had this big weight and this big power. And then he kind of changed who he was. And who is he now? Well, this guy has tremendous bat speed, is not making bad decisions, is in a great organization. So I've droned on to tell you everything I've seen with Andy Pejas over the last year, I think is leading up to, for what we're saying here, we're talking about sleepers. There's a million prospects I could tell you that I really like and I'm super into. But Pejas, I think, is a sleeper because he's just not on a bunch of those radars again. He's on the precipice of the major leagues. He would be a player that I think teams would target for. And I think he's going to take this new transformed version of himself and have a big breakout year. So I'm going to pick Andy Pejas as one of my sleeper hitters.
Yeah, love it. And you mentioned that like he's kind of surprisingly close to the major leagues. Like he is potentially next guy up for a team that has Jason Hayward starting right now in the outfield. At least as it's kind of projected, like he's on the 40-man roster. You know, like Miguel Vargas is still there. We saw him a little bit last year. You know, they don't have a great depth of what we've kind of been used to from the Dodgers. And so like those opportunities could definitely come, I think a bit sooner than expected this year for someone who kind of like, we've kind of gone through that cycle. It's kind of the post-hype breakout that, you know, you could always target. So, you know, always good to kind of grab a Dodgers player, that's, you know, close to the majors, who play on a very good team and, has kind of fallen off the hype train a little bit, if you will.
Exactly.
Rick. Floor is yours, man. Hard to kind of follow up with that, as he calls it, rambling analysis, but lots of good insight. Ro, what do you got for us, man?
No, it's true. And with the Dodgers organization, I feel like every time I'm writing an article, it's always about a Dodgers prospect and how they're able to develop them a certain way. You know, it's amazing. But the one I really wanted to talk about here is Ryan Bliss. This is a prospect that actually was out with the Welsh's team out there in Arizona, the Diamondbacks, right? Originally, so he was with that organization, played in AA and AAA last year, really crushed it in AA before getting to AAA for a small sample size before the trade deadline, moving to Seattle. Finished the year solid with Seattle, double-digit home runs, double-digit steals, good walk rates, and the strikeout rate was, you know, very manageable there. Former Auburn college player that was really successful there, did very good in the minor leagues to this point, and already in spring training, you know, has already played 10 games, is already hitting .333 with a .391 OBP and a .381 slug as well. Walking at 8.7% and striking out at just 21.7%, stealing bags out there as well. This is a guy that I think can be able to play all over the diamond. Yes, the Mariners did go out and acquire Polanco from the Twins, but I think that there's still going to be some opportunity here for Ryan Bliss to be able to get called up, you know, by mid-season, maybe even before, if they're needing somebody to be able to flex in at different parts throughout the infield here. And for fantasy purposes, I think that he is pretty underrated whenever it comes to that, because there's a lot that can come with a player of this kind of profile. And I don't see him really ranked very high, but I do see him going in a lot of startup drafts this year. So it's a guy that I've really been keeping my eye on, and especially in deeper dynasty leagues, this is a guy that you can be able to flex in almost at any time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, my own perception of Bliss has kind of evolved, because like when you remember him last year, if anyone recalls, he was like tearing up AA. He was leading the league in batting average for a while. And I think that kind of like in my head set him as like a, you know, a scrappy kind of contact hitter, spraying the ball everywhere. He hit .358 at AA, right? And, you know, we saw him promoted to AAA, you know, with Arizona. Didn't do too great, was traded, kind of brought it back a little bit. But like, I think it was kind of like a maybe a disappointment, especially being in the PCL, you know, and kind of expecting a bit more. But like, he was sneaky in that, like, he posted a .235 ISO in AA when he hit .358, posted a .215 in AAA with Seattle. And so he's got some sneaky pop. He's been consistently stealing bases really the whole time. So I think that he offers a lot in a fantasy profile, you know, a few different ways to, I think, profit from him being on your roster. So I think that's something
I'd throw in too. What's interesting, I told him at the beginning of spring training, first off, I bemoaned it because I was like, oh, Diamondbacks, I miss you. And then he laughed and he's like, a business decision. And Tink Hens had said through a confidant of mine that the guy said, who is the toughest out you've had, it comes to mind, and Tink Hens immediately went Ryan Bliss. He instantly said Ryan Bliss, and I told Ryan that, and Ryan like got this big smile, and he was like, that's, he's like, Tink is the best. And like, but he kind of knew that was who he is. I do have long-term questions about like where the power is going to be, because he's a skinnier guy. Like, his build does not have the build of like a 20 home run hitter, but sometimes there's sneaky builds. It's not even sneaky really, but he makes such good contact. He's got really good loft to his swing. He struggled with power in the AFL, but boy, I'll tell you, I think it was the playoff game, the play-in game to a championship. He hit a grand slam and he absolutely destroyed it. And it was like, that was that that uppercut turn that Ryan Bliss can have. And his advantage is his like elite zone skills. So he's able to tap into that. But he is one of those guys to me, like he has, I say this loosely, he's this body type that's like Abrams. He's not, because Abrams is like kind of taller and more wiry. But I always thought Abrams could like add bulk, and he never did. Ryan Bliss kind of has that same thing where I'm a little critical of like what Abrams did last year. I think it was like the peak. And I think it's based on some of his skills, it's going to be really hard to continuously repeat. That's kind of how I feel about Ryan Bliss. But the positives about Ryan Bliss always will be that he's going to make a ton of contact. He's going to get on base and he's going to steal. I mean, he stole 50 bases with the between Seattle, Actually, I guess I should throw in Arizona, both AAA and AA, 55 bases. It's absurd. So he can walk, he can get on base, he can steal, make contact, and you hope that the power is going to be there. And that's kind of like Nico Horner. So from a fantasy perspective, like the upside I would think of is like a Nico Horner with Ryan Bliss. And that's, you know, I'm not the biggest Nico Horner guy, but that's a pretty solid bet. That's a top 100 fantasy player.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, whenever you watch him play, he is a gamer. You know, he really does go out there and he impresses every time I watch him. So, you know, I think, Chris, you're spot on there. I think that Nico Horner is not a bad comp on there for him. But I think, you know, with Ryan Bliss, I think we can expect more whenever he does get an opportunity. The question now with Polanco being there, I thought that was his way in. Whenever they got Polanco in, I was like, I don't know now. So we'll have to see where he lands.
Yeah, absolutely. But the season does funny things. It is very long. And as we've even seen in the past couple of weeks, there are always injuries and things that pop up. So I think there will definitely be opportunities there. But we're going to move on to the second sleeper hitter that each of you have. Chris, back to you. Who's the second guy, the other Dodger that you wanted to bring up?
Yeah, I swear to God, like I did, because you guys sent me the sheet, I did Pejas first and then I sat on it. And then I came back and I just didn't look. And I was like, oh my God, I picked two Dodgers. So that doesn't help for my brand of the people that think I'm a Dodger fan, where I'm a lifelong Diamondbacks fan. The Dodger I'm picking is actually a first year player Dodger, and it's Kendall George. And I'm going to give you a pretty simplistic reason by it too, but it's going to kind of tie into what I said before. If you first look at his pro debut, it's great. He hit 362 at Complex, hit 381 when he went up to eight ball, stole a whole bunch of bases, did not strike out, double digit walks. I mean, you can't have much of a better pro debut. But here's my problem with him, because I saw him a ton in Complex, which is out here where I live in Arizona. He's a tiny kid. He's like, not only like kind of short, but he's skinny. And I was like, okay. You know, you look at the kind of Ryan Blissy, but this was like 18 years old. And you can envision where the body can kind of generate to, but you're just like, this is kind of a smaller guy. And then his pro debut also kind of laid out the tracks like, oh, there's not a lot of power potential in like 120 plate appearances. He had five total extra base hits and none were triples. You know, he had no homers. Everything else looks pretty good in the profile. Classic old thing is like power is the last thing to develop. Well, the other day when I was over there, Kendall George came out from, they were doing theirs, this is before that Asian Breeze stuff, and come out. I was shocked at how absolutely jacked Kendall George looked, like to a shocking degree. Like when I'm telling you, like he just, I'm not trying to down talk him, but there weren't like muscles in Complex, just kind of like skinny arms. He was like, wham, like he looked in person, like he had put on serious, serious muscle. And I was talking off air with someone in the industry about that, about Kendall George in general, and how, you know, the Dodgers had kind of reached a little bit from an industry perspective on Kendall George, and people were kind of questioning where was that going to go. But the whole reason behind it was because they felt he was going to be able to get that pro body, because from a skill set standpoint, he's pretty advanced. Again, this is a, you know, 18-year-old kid who was striking out under 20% of the time, walking double digit, going two levels when he was drafted, succeeding, stealing bases, getting hit. There was no power. He had like a 0.052 ISO in rookie ball. So what is the thing that needs to fix? Power. And he gains serious, serious muscle. I would, you know, guess 15. And on a body type like his too, you know, 15 pounds of like pure muscle is pretty significant. And maybe it's more. And that makes me think he's going to continue being able to do this. And he's very locked in. So, you know, last year, I think, tells a story. But part of the sleeper aspect to me is the work that he has done in one offseason. If he takes that skill set to what I was able to see in camp, a big year could be in store for him, because Kendall George is going to steal a lot of bases. He is an incredibly athletic guy. That 40 stolen bases is not out of the realm of possibility. But now if you start getting into 10 to 15 homers with a high batting average, you're talking about elite skill sets. You're looking at, like, I say this lightly, but like the Jackson Holliday type of mold. Like Jackson Holliday doesn't strike out. He walks, he gets on base, he steals bases. Everyone questions his power. Kendall George could get into that trajectory. I don't think he's even remotely as good of a hitter or anything like that, but I think Kendall George might be in for a pretty big season. So that is my sleeper.
All right. Yeah. I mean, there's always, like, every year we see it. There's some underrated guy that comes in through like J15 and starts blowing up in the season. He's added on a bunch of dynasty rosters. And honestly, I think there's a lot of, you know, dynasty leagues where he might not even be rostered at this point. You know, he was an FYPD guy. You know, maybe some of your shallower leagues, you might even be able to kind of go take a look at that, because you have these guys that just kind of come up that it's so tough. You know, we talk about it with the J15. It's so hard to really get a good sense of who these guys are when they come in. So it happens quick. So that's definitely a name to keep an eye on for sure. And then Rick, what do you got for us for your second sleeper hitter?
Yeah. So my second sleeper hitter is actually going to be a Cincinnati Red. And I know, Chris, the last time you and I talked, we talked a lot about Sal Stewart. But I know over the offseason, since we have talked, his stock has just been going through the roof. You can't really get him almost anywhere at this point. But in the wake of the Noelvi Marte, you know, news and everything, there's a prospect that I really, really like whenever I was doing the Red system breakdown this year, and that was Ricardo Cabrera. 19 years old, 5'11", shortstop. This guy really, really impressed me whenever I was diving deeper into his numbers. You know, he played at the complex in 2023 as well as low A, successful in both spots. Most of the games were played at the complex level, in which he slashed 350, 469, 559 with 5 home runs, 21 stolen bases. But what I like the most about him is that he can take a walk, and he's very successful in doing so. 12% while only striking out 20%. In his 175 plate appearances. So I think if he's able to get his full, you know, season going at low A, be able to try to move up to high A, maybe by mid-season or so, this is a guy that could be able to move relatively quickly through the Reds organization. Obviously, it's really starting to stack up in that. But, you know, where I always say, you know, the talent will find its place. If you're just trying to project it out this far in advance, you're not going to be very successful doing so. Go where the talent is. And right now, Ricardo Cabrera is a guy that you could be able to get in some of these deeper dynasty leagues for a fraction of the cost of what some of these top tier, you know, top 100 prospects are right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Great call out there. Also got to love the Reds representation. But that does it for the hitters. We are going to go and take a quick ad break. We'll be back in just a minute here, and then we'll dive into some pitchers that y'all should be aware of.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When something happens to your car, you might say,
"No! My car!"
But what you really need to say is something that can actually help.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And just like that, State Farm is there to help you file your claim right on the State Farm mobile app. So, just remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
Cheers to a great day and this ice-cold Corona.
You know what would make this day even better? My grandma's carne asada.
Throw in some music.
We can watch the game. Or we could keep it simple.
Corona, la vida más fina. Get your Corona at ordercorona.com. Relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
All right, we're back, and we're going to dive into the pitcher side of things now. So really similar format, as we're going to be breaking down a couple guys for you. We're going to start with Chris again with his first sleeper pitching prospect to be aware of going into 2024.
Well, I'm going to steal this a little tiny bit, little baby bit, and this is kind of a tease to an episode I got coming up here on Prospect One. I do this annual episode of Bold Predictions, and it's just get some different analysts on, one hitter, one pitcher, what's a big, crazy, big, bold thing that's going to happen, and this guy came up, and this guy came up pretty big, and what was interesting about it, so I'm taking... And go into the episode and you'll know who I'm giving credit to for part of this. But also, it clicked a few things on some stuff I had seen in camp. And the pitcher I'm going to go with as a sleeper is with Padres. And I do love Drew Thorpe. I like a lot of the guys. Jairo Iriarte. I like Drew Thorpe. But it's going to be Dylan Lesko. And this is shout out to Jeff Ponce for talking about Dylan Lesko. The fastball has always been graded out really, really high. I saw him pitch a couple times in complex. Actually, kind of got it taken to him. Jansel Luis, there's a video on my Twitter if you want to check it out. Jansel Luis, who got some crazy prospect hype in some lists recently with the Diamondbacks, had this video of him absolutely just taking Lesko deep. And Lesko was still coming back from injury, still getting acclimated. But this spring, I've noticed Dylan Lesko has been in camp and way, way before camps opened up. He's been there the entire time. He's been working with Robbie Snelling. Him and Snelling have been locked in. And there have been so many Padres who are getting run. I personally love Robbie Snelling. There's Adam Mazur, who a lot of people have pressed up as well. I want to say it might have been Baseball America that had put him up, or maybe Fangraphs. But Lesko, huge fastball. Good curveball, and as Jeff Pond said, one of the best changeups in baseball. The control is locking in, and Dylan Lesko is ready for an enormous season. He really is. And if you tell me I've got a pitcher who doesn't have massive control issues with a big fastball and a monster changeup with a slider that's going to with a curveball that is going to continuously set batters off, that's a three-pitch mix that's going to dominate. And now that he's continuously off of the Tommy John and he's healthier, I think he's in for a big year. And I was even more motivated by a conversation I had on Prospect One that you guys can check out. But Dylan Lesko is going to be sleeper pitcher number one.
All right, absolutely. I love the love for the Padres organization, because they were one of the teams that I wrote up for Pitcherless this offseason, and it's kind of crazy what they've been able to do since the Juan Soto trade. Like, they had kind of like sold out to get Juan Soto, and you know, they sent Abrams away and James Wood and everything like that, and made a bunch of like win now deals, spent all that money, and it seemed like they really just sold out for winning, and it didn't happen. But like, what they were still able to do in the last like year or so is just like very slowly but surely, in like a really weird random AJ Preller way of just like developing talent, they now again I think have one of the better farm systems in baseball. I mean, like you mentioned all those pitching prospects, like we're seeing Jackson Merrill get a ton of hype right now, Graham Pauly, Jacob Marcy, like there's so many guys in this organization, and it's so deep, and it's kind of crazy how the Padres just do this. They create so much value in their system, you know, because it's like
I like how you said that, because I thought they were done for quite some time, because yeah. when you have like a system, like there's some teams that have done a really good job. Dodgers would be an example of it, where it's just like they continuously maintain, you know. I think the Diamondbacks have actually done a decent job of that for quite some time. You just kind of maintain. Oh, you get some guys that start leaving, and then you replenish, and that's what you want to do. And the Padres so aggressively depleted their system in that Juan Soto trade, getting Hassel and getting Wood out, Gore to a degree. They depleted their system so bad that you kind of looked and you're like, how are they going to come back from? Like, how long is this going to take? And now you look, you said all those names. I am absolutely in love with Jacob Marcy. I think they have one of the better pitching cores in minor league baseball. They might not have insane depth, but if you look from their top five of Lesko and Mazur and Snelling, and you go to Jairo Iriarte, like those are some serious names. And Leo DeVries. Leo DeVries is one of those. Homer Bush, I think, is criminally underrated. Dylan Head might be a monster this season. I didn't mean to like go off on it, but like I totally agree with what you said. It is incredibly impressive how much they turned it around, and hopefully they can get back to a funnel system. And that's what you want. Like the Orioles, I think, are in a really good funnel right now, where it's like you just keep making the right decisions, keep developing them correctly. You can trade some, you can bring some up, but don't let that, you know, pond, you know, get empty. You want to keep burning and churning. And there are some teams that do it really, really well. The Padres seem to be that, and they just took like a two or three year hit, and they're back.
Yeah, it's amazing to me whenever you look at it, because writing this system up year after year, I was not looking forward to it going into this year. And then whenever I looked at everything that happened in that system, it was amazing. I mean, you really had to take note. And Jake, I mean, you're absolutely right, man. They really did turn it over really quickly. And I'm excited to see what they do this upcoming season.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Because then, I mean, how often do you see a team coming off that insanely disappointing of a season have still this much hope, like going into this year? You know, like with the White Sox, like they didn't really go all out because they didn't spend much money to like really augment the rebuild and everything like that. But like they're just a disaster right now. The Mets, they went all in and they're just a disaster right now. Padres went all in, it went horribly, and they still have a window to be competitive. So that's obviously really cool. And I'm going to talk about another Padres pitcher here. You mentioned him here, but Jairo Iriarte, I mean, like it's, you know, he kind of came up through last year and really started kind of catching my eye with some of the strikeout numbers and whatnot. He was promoted to Double A midseason as a reliever. And he, you know, did, I think it was probably like 10 to 12 appearances in the bullpen. And I mean, his command all of a sudden was incredible going out of the bullpen. So that's, you know, encouraging to see that he did kind of have that success there, but they stretched him out as the season went on. And he kind of started having those kind of command issues again. So but he got up to a full kind of starter's workload by the end of the season. He'd kind of broken his way back into the rotation. And I think he's just someone that you kind of have to be weary of because of the inability to throw strikes consistently right now. But I think that he's going to be an impactful arm, I think, sooner than later. And for me, I think I'm willing to take the shot on maybe he gets promoted and he's in the bullpen. And we're like, you know, chomping at the bit saying like, oh, maybe like we should just give him a chance to start. Why are the Padres kind of putting him there? And I think that it's possible he kind of eventually makes his way into that rotation. But the organization has shown that they're kind of still playing with it a little bit. If he, you know, needed to get promoted, you know, and kind of be in that bullpen and kind of work his way through, you know, he's not an established starter right now. He doesn't have the stuff for that right now, but what he does have is a very, very good fastball. That's just, it really sets up like his slider very well. It's an absolutely disgusting slider, and that's kind of like his bread and butter, right? Then he's kind of working on developing further pitches beyond that, but there's a really good base here for swing and miss, and you just have to, I think, hope and pray a little bit that it works out and he starts throwing some more strikes and being effective in longer appearances. But I even think, like, if he becomes an elite reliever for the Padres, I don't think that's also horrible either. Like, I think he has the stuff to be a late inning guy if that's kind of where he ends up. But he's someone I think in a deeper league I'd be willing to take a chance on, just knowing that, like, he's going to be good in whatever role, I think, just because of his, I think that slider is going to carry him pretty far. And I honestly like to see him be a reliever in the minors already, because like, you're not like going, is he going to like have to fail as a starter and then kind of be a reliever after that? He's already had the experience. I think he's comfortable. And the team who doesn't have as much depth in pitching as I'm sure they would like to, I think they could be comfortable in bringing him up as they need him this year, because they've already seen him in that role, and really his commander improved significantly in the bullpen last year. So I think he's someone that could get some, you know, major league innings like in this, like this summer, because he is, I think, really kind of knocking on the door here. I was just pulling up the roster resource, but yeah, so he's on the 40 man, and the Padres don't have, like, they have all these starters, they have all these prospects, but they're not super close. And I think Iriarte is potentially the closest of their big, you know, prospects. And I think that he could kind of bridge that gap potentially and might get the first shot. So I really like his stuff. That's kind of what I'm betting on here. And, you know, I think he's just an impact arm regardless. And I think you just have to be okay with some reliever risk here.
Chris, does this kind of remind you a little bit of Luis Patino whenever he was in the Padres organization prior to the trade?
I hope not. I hope it doesn't go that way. By the way, he's like apparently back with the system, but I haven't seen him. I've been over to Padres camp like 3 times. I haven't seen anything. Yeah, I mean, I know where you're going with that. I like immediately in my brain, like, they're so physically different. Like Iriarte, I get very hyper focused on this and I talk about it a lot, but like there's another guy, like he got big. Like he's a big dude. They list like Van Graaff's list him at 6'2", 160. Absolutely not. He is 6'3", 200 easy right now. A lot of guys were talking big out of camp, but yeah, I know what you mean. Like big fastball slider. It kind of does have the remnants of like a relief. With a guy like this, it is going to be twofold: command and change up development, or
third pitch development and if he will be a starter. And I think they want him to be similar to Luis Patino, but, you know, he couldn't get consistent and really get anything outside the fastball and slider. So, yeah, from that perspective, I totally see what you're saying. I do think he's a big physical presence with big strikeout potential, and it really could go either way because they've had a couple of these. Like, Michel Baez was kind of that. Adrian Morion, they thought, was going to be this, like, big, you know, lead-up starter. Mm-hmm. And these guys that just can't be consistent with command, they're going to move off of. But the team, the options are like limited now. You know, they do have all of these great pitchers, but to your point in putting him on this list, like, Ariarte is the guy that's going to get one of the first cracks with Drew Thorpe. I mean, I would say if Drew Thorpe does not break and into the rotation, camp with the rotation, he will be the first one that's going to get an opportunity for a starter. So they'll give Ariarte his opportunity. And if he commands well, he will stick there. If not, he probably will go into like a leverage bullpen situation.
Right, absolutely. All right, so we've done a lot on the Dodgers, a lot on the Padres, and we could focus on maybe some other organizations now. We're going to go on to Chris's second sleeper pitcher here, taking it back to the East Coast. What do you got for us?
Yeah, I got Will Warren with the New York Yankees. It's funny, like, a couple of years ago, someone was like, why don't you like him more? Like, it seems like just like the type of guy you would like. And I was like, I don't know. I'm like, I need to continuously keep looking in. And we got some AAA data. This was according to Prospects Live. Pretty fascinating data. I mean, the sinker fastball, and I think it says it is a fastball. It's got, you know, sink to it. Was registering right around 94, 93.6 that did not have any good swing and whiff rate on it whatsoever, but it was like really heavy ground ball. I believe it was a 60% ground ball at AAA. But the traditional four-seam fastball, so this was the difference. Sinker, 93.6, no swing. The traditional four-seam fastball had an almost 14% swinging strike rate with some really good spin numbers. Guy also throws a sweeper that put up 3,000. So a huge, this is like the Jackson Job type of sweeper that he was throwing with a 20% swinging strike rate, according to Prospects Live. And then the changeup also had like a, you know, really good ground ball rate as well. So, I mean, this is, I can dig this. This is a guy who is going to pump the zone with a pretty good fastball, get ground balls, and has just a ridiculous slider and sweeper, however you want to designate it. And, you know, he was up for a rotation spot that doesn't look like he's going to lock in, though I will say this spring, in two games that he's pitched, he's almost got a 12 K per nine, hasn't given up a walk. You know, he's getting strikeouts and a couple earned runs that, you know, he's ready. You know, he 130 innings pitched last year. That's along the lines of a guy that can push into the majors and not have any type of cap. If that is something that the Yankees could do, I'd point out, as we're recording this, we don't know what's going to happen with Gerrit Cole. If anything happens with Gerrit Cole, you can be assured that Blake Snell is going to be getting a phone call and he'll be signing. But the point is like there could be opportunity. There's a lot of injury proneness in there. And Will Warren has just got some good sneaky stuff. Ground balls that can kind of push up your ERA, it push up in a positive way. It can give you, you know, some solid ERA numbers on a good defense. And he's got some swinging strike pitches. So I don't know. I think Will Warren is a guy that feels a bit underrated. Walks were a little bit high, but high strikeouts last year, right around, just trying to pull the number up, is just under 150 strikeouts he had last year in 130 innings. I think he can go deep into games. I think he's got an arsenal that's ready. So Will Warren, I think, is pretty underrated, and he is my second sleeper.
Yeah, and I think just looking at the Yankees, you know, starting pitching depth this offseason, I think, you know, for anyone who did any like dynasty startups or maybe like a draft and hold, you know, deep league and, you know, NFBC DCs or something like that, looking at the Yankees rotation, like it seemed pretty like pretty short up, pretty secured. And beyond the major league rotation, they have a good collection of prospects. You know, they have Clayton Beater, Chase Hampton. They did have Thorpe before they traded him away. And, you know, I think it's like easy to look at that and be like, oh, like there's going to be so much competition. Where are these guys going to get innings? And it's funny how baseball works and pitching works, because the opportunities come trades happen. Like last year, it reminds me of the Guardians, how we had Logan Allen and Gavin Williams and Tanner Bibee and even Espino before he got injured. And it's like, oh, where are these guys going to go? You know, they had Plesak and they had Savali and everyone. And so it's hard to see like how these opportunities are going to come, but baseball works in funny ways and things open up all the time. Injuries happen. Garrett Cole randomly goes in for an MRI, you know, like so many things happen. And so it's a long season. And so I think these guys are definitely going to get some run. And I think, like you said, Chris Warren's definitely going to be one of the first. He was the first of their kind of big prospects to get a crack at AAA last year. And so I think that the organization definitely believes in him, and it'll be fun to see kind of how that competition works out.
It kind of reminds me of it's like Fott-ish too. If you're looking for Arsenal, I talk a lot about him. Everybody gets on my case about it, but he turned it around. He was incredible once Brännström made that fix on the rubber. But this is a similar what made Fott really good, and I think he's a sleeper for this year for traditional fantasy, is that he started heavily throwing the sinker, so he was now sinker, fastball, sweeper, and the mound. Change made his fastball more efficient, and then he could occasionally drop in a changeup. It's about the same arsenal, and it's about the same velocity. It's like 93, 94 on the fastball, but Warren's got a more devastating sweeper. And I think, when you're looking at those results, 9.5 K per nine higher, if he can just make sure that it's, solid command, not get, beat up on in New York's home ballpark, Will Warren could be super sneaky.
Yeah, absolutely. The one more sleeper pitching prospect that I got for y'all, I want to talk about Mason Black. It seems like it's kind of a case of the hype dying off in the PCL. And, we've seen it, that guy's kind of underperformed there. And he was definitely, I think, getting some attention in AA. He was doing really well last year at that level. He was showing a bit more swing and miss than I think people anticipated. I think he had about a 13.5 swing strike rate with data from Chris Clegg. So shout out to Chris. I think he got the promotion to AAA. He still had a decent strikeout rate, but missed a lot less bats. Swing strike dropped to about 10%. And it's not like rainbows and butterflies. I can't see exactly how he's going to come and dominate, but he's someone who I think has the opportunity in a rotation with a ton of injuries right now. And he has a shot to make the rotation out of camp. And it could be a thing of he comes up and we're like, well, obviously he was going to be this good. How didn't we see this coming? You look at the PCL, look at minor league numbers, and it's unclear. And I think he's just someone with the arsenal is deep, right? He has a bunch of pitches that he could work with, primarily a sinker slider guy. The slider doesn't get necessarily as many whiffs as you would hope. That's sitting at just under 13%. And that's the second most thrown pitch, throws the sinker obviously primarily. And, it's kind of a kitchen sink approach, and he doesn't get as many ground balls as you would like. Of course, a Giants sinker slider changeup pitcher, you think of Logan Webb, he's not Logan Webb because he doesn't get quite the ground balls that Logan Webb does. And of course, he's just not Logan Webb. But I think that there's a bit more room for swing and miss there. I think the PCL has kind of depleted his numbers a little bit, the output. And I think that he has a lot to work with in his arsenal, a lot of different ways to get out hitters. And if he throws a bit more fly balls, allows a bit more fly balls than we'd like, I think that park is going to help him out a little bit as well. And so he's someone with opportunity, with a good arsenal, with solid command, and he could kind of take a step forward and be like a, oh, duh, that was going to happen kind of guy when we're looking at him in May, as he's kind of potentially gotten a few starts to, at the major league level.
Yeah, I completely agree. This is a guy that's been on my radar for a little while. And whenever you look at his minor league numbers, like you said, Jake, they pop off the page. As a very safe pitcher, one that in deeper dynasty leagues is one that I love to be able to try to go out and acquire, because this is somebody who you can be able to plug into your rotation whenever those injuries start to mount up. And I think that he'll end up putting together a solid career. He's got the pitch ability to be able to do so, and the arsenal as well. So I like this call.
All right, awesome. Well, we got the sleeper hitters, the pitchers ready for you. We took advantage of Chris being available to chat with us today. So again, really appreciate it, man. Thank you for coming on the show, and you know, we'll keep in touch, and good luck in your continuing coverage of spring training. Everyone go and, you know, pay attention to things that he's doing. You know, it's really cool to see the insight that we get from, you know, from you. And so yeah, thanks again, man. Appreciate you coming on.
Hey, thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Now, Chris, what do you got going on?
A lot. the same old. The best thing I could tell everybody is follow me on Twitter. Is it the Welsh? If you'd like, I will tweet out lots of prospect stuff and videos, and I'll share the things. In this league is always going on, 2 episodes a week. Prospect one, I've teased, I've got that you know, that annual episode I do of bold predictions, and in season I'm talking fantasy prospects. And then of course I'm over at Fantasy Pros now, where we do have our Fantasy Fest on Wednesday. If people want to check it out, 4 hours of just nonstop fantasy stuff. We actually are going to do some prospect stuff. Eric Cross is going to be joining prospects for the year. I will probably be doing more prospect coverage at Fantasy Pros as well. We've got our daily show. I'll be on Monday through Friday for leading off when the in season starts. So I told you to follow my Twitter to find the stuff, and then I told you everything, but just follow the Twitter, and like I said, it'll lead you to the things that I'm doing.
Follow the Twitter. It's easy as that. Thank you, Chris.
There you
again,
go.
Everybody, have a great rest of your days. Thank you all for listening. Catch our next episode on Thursday, the 21st. Of course, you can find the podcast on Twitter as well, at PL on the Farm. Have yourselves a great baseball week. Thank you very much.
When you buy a new house, you might say,
shut the front door.
Winning.
No, seriously, shut the front door. We own this house now.
But you actually need to say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. The local State Farm agent is there to help you choose the coverage you need.
Welcome to my crib. No one says that anymore, but I don't care.
So just remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.